Okay, so this week is Parshas Torah, and there is some synergy for us in that this is somewhat of a brachos topic. Not explicitly, and not as much as Parshas Zachar was, which was also not super explicit, but both Zachar and Parah are between the lines, or beneath the surface, somewhat of a Maseches Brachos topic. So last week we talked about the question of whether Parsha Zachar really is a Din Min HaTorah, to read that in Shul, and to read that with a minyan, and to read that section specifically in the HaTorah, and we noted that there were some indications in Rishonim, and some other indications in Rishonim otherwise, but nonetheless that was the perception. It seems that there are also some Rishonim that feel the same way about Parshas Parah, even though that doesn't get as much attention. But there are some Rishonim who have that phrasing, and that actually makes it into Shulchan Aruch also, even though it's not as widely known. So the view that Parshas Parah may also be Min HaTorah is something that shows up in some of the Rishonim, and is quoted in Shulchan Aruch. So where does it show up in the Rishonim? It shows up in the beginning of the second parak. And that discussion, which we mentioned last week in the context of Zachar, not all the same Rishonim, but it's in the context of where the Gemara has that machlokes about whether Divrei Torah b'chol lashon nemra or b'lashon HaKodesh nemra. And the Gemara, the Rishonim, want to know what the Nafkamina is, because it's not a Nafkamina for Kriya Shema, because it's contrasted with Kriya Shema. So if it's not Kriya Shema, so what are we talking about? What is it that's Min HaTorah that would have to be B'lashon HaKodesh or not? So Tosfos says there are a few things where you do have a Kriya Min HaTorah, and that would therefore be subject to the salacha of Lashon HaKodesh or not. So Tosfos says Kmo Parsha Zachar. But other Rishonim have the same discussion, and in some of the other Rishonim, not Tosfos, but some of the other Rishonim, like the Rashba, they throw in Parshas Parah. So that's much harder to understand, because where does Parshas Parah come from? Parshas Zachar, even if we weren't sure that Parshas Zachar leads to all of those details being required in HaTorah, and that was somewhat of a discussion how that comes about, but we at least could trace the path. But where does Parshas Parah come from to be called Min HaTorah? So there are some who suggest that it's a typo, and that it's a Toh Sofer, and that those Rishonim really were also referring to Zachar, and that it was Pei-Pei, and that it really was saying Parshas Purim, and it got interpreted as Parshas Parah. And others feel that that's not a tenable interpretation. In general, saying a Toh Sofer is always the interpretation of last resort. It's not what we like to say. And it doesn't seem like that's really the case here. It just it does appear in a lot of Rishonim, and again, it makes it into Shulchan Aruch. So it's hard to believe that this is a typo. Poor Parshas Parah ends up being accused of being a typo in a few places, because in Mara it's also accused of being a typo. So it gets no respect, Parshas Parah. It's a part of its problem. But so here the same kind of accusations get thrown at it. But it seems like this is a legitimate usage. So what exactly is the source for Parshas Parah being Min HaTorah? So there are various suggestions. There are a number of suggestions in various places. Just first, the idea that it should be specifically B'tzibur, the Tshuvas Divrei Yisrael, suggests that perhaps similarly to Korban, to Parshas Zachar being B'tzibur, that that correlates to the fact, as some understand, that Melchemes Amalek is B'tzibur, so therefore the Kriya should be B'tzibur. So maybe Parshas Parah, since the Parah Aduma comes from the moment at B'tzibur, so therefore also the Kriya should be B'tzibur, perhaps. But still, where do you get the idea that the reading of that section, the beginning of Parshas Chukas, should be a mitzvah at all? So one suggestion is that it is perhaps a fulfillment. The Meshech Chachma has this suggestion that perhaps it is a fulfillment of the idea that the Torah says, "Vizartim es b'nei Yisrael mitumasim," that you have to separate the people from Tumah, and therefore that needs to be a public declaration. So perhaps this is a fulfillment of that. The Aruch HaShulchan has a suggestion that the language of the Torah here in the section about the Parah is Chukas Olam, that this is a chok that is going to be observed forever. So we know that we are in the middle of a long tkufa where we're not actually practicing the Parah Aduma. So if this is always being observed, so how is that expressing itself now? So it could be that this is another example of Neshama Parim Sfaseinu, that we observe it through reading about it, and therefore maybe that's the idea, that at least once or twice a year to read the Psukim is the way in which this is fulfilled, and maybe therefore that Chukas Olam is a Dimana Torah to read it. That's another suggestion. But there are those who have another very interesting approach to what exactly is going on here. And that is as follows, that there is another mystery, and that is there is what seems to be a mitzvah that we don't fulfill. There is a pasuk in Parshas Ekev that tells us about a zechira, one of the six zechiras, that doesn't seem to have a fulfillment. And that is, Zachar al tishkach es asher heksafta es asher melkecha b'midbar, that we should remember that we angered God in the midbar, which seems most likely to be a reference to the Chet HaEgel. Well, there are those who understand it differently. But on the surface, that's what it seems like. That's what it seems most likely to be the case, and that's how many understand it, that there is a mitzvah to remember the Chet HaEgel. So if that's the case, so how come we don't have a Shabbos Parshas HaEgel? So we just spent so much time last week talking about the obligation to remember Zechiras HaMalek and all the fulfillment of that. So what happens to the mitzvah of the Chet HaEgel? So there are some who suggest that we have different methods of fulfillment for all the Zechiros. And when it comes to Egel and Miriam, which the Ramban writes in his commentary to the Torah, and also in his Hasagos and the Sefer HaMitzvos, he has the Mitzvos Taseh Shashachach HaRambam, the way he puts it, the Mitzvos that the Rambam forgot. It's a funny way of putting it. But he says that these should be counted, Miriam and Egel should be counted as among the 613 Mitzvos, a real mitzvah, and we don't seem to have a fulfillment of it. So there are some who suggest that really, since nowadays we read the whole Torah every year, so that could suffice for the fulfillment of these zechiros. And since Egel and Miriam involve averos, so we're embarrassed about those things and we'd really rather forget about them, but we have a mitzvah to remember, so we do it in the most minimal way. And we have the laning once a year, that's sufficient. So that's a question, how exactly we fulfill this mitzvah, if indeed it is a mitzvah. So there are some who suggest that maybe we can make a shidduch here. So we have a mitzvah without a fulfillment, and we have a fulfillment that doesn't seem to have a source. So the Derugas Abosim in his Tshuvas, and the Malbim in his very brief Sefer on Halacha, the Arz Tachayim, suggest maybe we can make a shidduch here, and maybe the mitzvah of Zechiras HaEgel can be brought together with the mysterious obligation to read Parshas Parah, and we can assume that they are one and the same. Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky has a slightly different version of this, because he assumes Zachar as Asher Hiksafta is actually not about the Egel, but it's about Mara, and that there is an association on that level. If you take a look at his commentary over there. But others assume that it's about the Egel, and that the connection has to do with the symbolism that Rashi quotes in the beginning of Parshas Chukas, that there is a connection there, and the understanding that the Parah Aduma is a kapara for the Egel, and that the symbolism is that if the child makes a mess, so Yavo Ha'em, let the mother come and clean up the mess that the child made. And just like the cow is the mother of the Egel, so the mother has to come and clean up the mess. And that's what's going on here. So what exactly is the nature of that relationship? So that's a interesting point to explore. There is a sefer, I think I mentioned, I talked about Parshas Shkalim, called Zmanei Ruvain by Reuven Schwartz, a whole sefer on the Dal Parshios, and he has quite a lot to say about this, and he talks about it. Bariuchas, one point that he makes is that the notion of the kapara, specifically the process of tara from Tumas Mace, being connected to the Egel Hazav. He has a discussion there about the status of the Jewish people at Matan Torah was comparable to Adam HaRishon in Gan Eden. So the whole idea that the Chet of Adam brought death to the world is a similar event with the Chet HaEgel bringing death now to the Jewish people. So needing a kapara of a type of tara from Tumas Meis, and therefore Paraduma is a proper kapara for that point, and that's one level. And then he goes on to say some more, which I'm a little bit adapting here. I don't know if this is exactly what he means, but commenting on the words of the Beis Halevi and others, that there was a major shift from the first Luchos to the second Luchos. At the first Luchos, everything was spelled out, and the second Luchos, there was a major shift in how we related to Torah, and there was a need now for Yegiya and Amala, and having to actually work and understand things, and the whole role of Torah Shebaal Peh. So that is relevant to his explanation, but I think I'm a little bit adapting it, I don't know if this is exactly what he's getting at. But part of the sin of the Chet HaEgel, and part of what went wrong there, was the Jews jumping to conclusions when Moshe didn't come exactly according to their cheshbonos. So the assumption that you understand everything and that you can jump to a conclusion based on that was a big part of their error. So that being the case, part of that kapara is being confronted with that which you have to appreciate that you can't understand, and that which is beyond you, and the whole new phase of Torah, even though this mitzvah is from before, this isn't a new mitzvah that was being given at that time as part of the original Torah, but a reinforcement of the notion that you have to be able to appreciate that the Torah is bigger than you and there are aspects that you can't understand. That is a big part of the kapara for what led to the ego. And the truth is that's a big part of the issue with idolatry, to have to appreciate a God that is bigger than you, not a God that is smaller than you. And that is essentially a big part of the kapara. So that is one aspect of it. But overall, the idea of the purpose of remembering the Chet HaEgel and the question of what exactly is this mitzvah for, it seems that there is a very compatible notion here that we should specifically channel that mitzvah into the Paraduma rather than having a kriya of the Parsha of the Egel specifically. Although many years it happens to work out, not this year, but many years it actually happens to work out that Parshas Para is read on Kisiso, so you go actually right from the Egel to Para, so you go right from the Chet to the Kapara, which is interesting. But the fact that we don't have a Shabbos Parshas HaEgel, and that we fulfill this, if this theory is correct, that we fulfill this mitzvah specifically through the Paraduma rather than through the Chet HaEgel. So one understanding of the nature of this mitzvah is that we should realize that there is always the capacity for tshuva. And in fact, the Gemara says that lo hayu ruyim lo samaisa, that the Jewish people didn't really deserve to have the Chet HaEgel happen. Elo lamed tshuva l'rabim, but this happened so that we could understand the possibility of tshuva on a mass level. So if the message is that tshuva is possible, so then we want to focus specifically not on our downfall, so that we should feel terrible and depressed, but on the ability to come back and to return and to do tshuva. So it makes sense that we would focus specifically on the kapara, and that we would look at that as the more hopeful message rather than dwell on the downfall. So if that is the theme, so then it is perhaps readily understandable why we would use this as our focus. So that's one idea. But there are those who have a different understanding. I think if you look in the Kedushas Levi, Alatori has a section on the Zechiras. I think he discusses a different understanding, if I recall correctly, as to why it is that we have the mitzvah of remembering the ego. So there are those who understand it differently, that it's really a cautionary tale, that we shouldn't rest on our laurels, that we should appreciate that even when we were at the highest possible madrega, just after receiving the Torah, so it's still possible to stumble and to fall, and that we should never be content. So if that's the case, so then does this mahalach still work? So I think actually very much so. And that may go to the central question of the paraduma, the paradox, and the question that is considered so troubling, the issue of why it is that it could be both metame and metahir, same time, why it could both metahir tamehim and metame tahorim. And perhaps one way to understand that point is that there is no external tool that is completely safe, and that it is always up to us to pay attention. And this is related a little bit to what we spoke about yesterday regarding the concept of Makom Kavua and the idea of Avraham Avinu and his relationship to his Makom Kavua and the Gemara connecting those two, and that Avram's Anivus had to do with his appreciation of his Makom Kavua, that it wasn't a Makom that was to blame for with his Tefillah wasn't successful, but that it was about him. So we have to recognize that it's not that there is any external tool that is going to be a complete mitaher no matter what happens. It's always going to be up to us. And yes, responsibility is very much focused on the environment, and we are responsible to choose an environment that is conducive to the highest chances of success and to avoid environments that are risky and dangerous. But ultimately, to recognize that there is never a perfect environment or external tool that you can just set on autopilot and abdicate all responsibility, that ultimately there is always going to be responsibility, and ein hadavar toli ela bi, and that there is no external setting that is going to be completely safe, and it's not going to matter how much responsibility and care and zahiris we bring to it. So that perhaps is one of the enduring messages of the Parah Adumah, and that is one of the enduring messages of the Egel Hazav, and that is today as well as much as ever was a crucial message in a dangerous world and in a complicated world. And as we continue to pray for easier times, we take both the message of tshuva and the message of zahiris that comes along with the Egel Hazav and the Parah Adumah, and we pray that in this chus of the power of the Parah Adumah to flip things around in 180 degrees, we should again see a complete diversion from tuma to tara, from darkness to light, and see miracles from Heruvia Menu. All right, Yishkarach.